Blog Talk Radio.
Step forward, you're taking two steps back and another three steps forward, and Well, what does that mean exactly, George, the time of no time?
Lila, I don't know. I honestly don't know. But, you know, in following this Mayan calendar, we have been doing it for a while. We have entered that time of no time. And this is the time now, the 11-year cycle, where it may be more than that, I'm not sure. But it's a time where nothing is real and everything is real. And I think it's it started in 98, I'm not sure, but this goes to 2012, 2011, it depends on your perspective. But, you know, I've been following this for years where, you know, things, not everything is real, but everything is real. And this week, I was remembering back when I was a kid, and we used to read about the famine in the world. And India was the country that all the starving people. But what happened is that scientists went to work and they developed a grain or manipulated grain where they can grow rice in any kind of a climate, any kind of territory, a terrain. And, you know, it would grow. And, you know, it brought that starving country back, you know, to where it was a leader of people again. And now it's the second largest country in the world. But, you know, we did that, and I think it was by putting our good science to work. And I want to jump 20, 30 years ahead of that and look at the Vietnam War. Now, you know, it's Monsanto who produced the Agent Orange that killed a lot of the vegetation there that was used in the war.
Yep.
But it devastated our troops and a couple generations after them. And it was horrifying. And it's a horrifying thing what we did. But genetically, you know, it just shows that we can do whatever we want. And my point is some of the farmers now in India have a problem because you can only buy certain seeds or you can only buy seeds from certain suppliers. And with them comes copyright, and you are bound by the copyright patents on the crops that you're producing.
And that's Monsanto, George. And most of the seeds are genetically modified.
They all are.
Right.
And what's probably that? I don't know if you're going through that, but if you're leading up to that, George. But there's in India right now. There's a plague of suicides amongst the Indian
farmers.
Because they are just unable to the seed that they're getting is not producing what it was. And they can't, and they have to buy the seed every year because they rather than get their own seed. And it's just a devastating nightmare for them. And, you know, well, I guess what bothers me, so this is a country, this is a country that you don't hear much about anymore, or if you ever really did, is India. And even though it's the second most populated country in the world, we're devastating. You know, it's a devastating situation there. And a lot of it is having to do with genetically modified seeds and you know, raping the agricultural system over there. You know,
what were you?
Well, I think to the extent that Lila, that this goes on, and you know, you can only buy seeds that will produce 1 year of crop. If you tried to take seeds from that crop that you've produced. The seeds won't grow.
Right,
and now, that's right. So they wouldn't be able to produce any more. But what's happening is that some of these crops will draw certain bugs and so forth to them. And the only way that you kill them is by certain genetically manipulated poisons that were genetically manipulated, you know, for that type of plant.
Right.
And it's having to buy the insecticide from the same suppliers and so forth, which takes us back, you know, to Agent Orange.
Roundup. Roundup is what they
yeah.
what they sell them.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
To destroy their plant, to destroy the weeds and stuff, and
oh,
but
it's such a mess. It's such a
yeah,
horrible thing we've done.
And by
Lila,
anyway,
you're right there, and that's what I mean about this. You know, as an example of nothing is real, everything is real, and yet here's an example of both things that we've experienced in our lifetime. And, you know, it's scary. Is it real or not?
It is real in the sense that it's manipulated, but it's definitely having real effects.
Mm-hmm.
My thought is that if we're in a time of no time, creates such a void of reality, if you will. But
maybe it's closing a void in reality that needs to be closed, and that could be basically what we're experiencing, the closing
maybe.
Of those.
Maybe that's it. Maybe that would make a lot more sense, because
they talk about the ending of time where everything comes to an end, but how does it come to an end?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, well, we can, you know, we can probably imagine anyway, which would do fine. But, you know, there's a lot of things out there that have been put in motion for a number of years. And, you know, organized religion, Christianity is one example, or Judaism or Islam.
Right.
You know, you have an understanding here that has to meet its fulfillment, and you know, it just could be another way of that happening, ending, if you want to call it that.
Yeah, I think that I've always wondered. I mean, we've manipulated time always, and even it's much more obvious now with your daylight savings time bull that we have here. That makes absolutely no sense to anybody.
No,
but,
no, it does make sense. It's not manipulating, Leo.
Absolutely, it's manipulating.
It's using it for.
Monday,
utilizing.
Monday ahead, and the next day it's an hour back, and the next day it's an hour ahead, and you know.
That isn't how it is.
Every 6 months.
Yeah, well, that's not one day after the other. It's every 6 months.
Yeah, but it takes quite a while to catch up. Okay, and as soon as you catch, as your body and your mind and everything else catches up to that extra hour, you know, all of a sudden it's thrown back again. My belief is that daylight savings time is nothing more than a mind controlling experiment, you know, to manipulate, you know, the American people, you know, by screwing around with their biological clocks, you know, and
Leo,
yeah,
Leo,
what?
You know, would you tell a farmer that?
Yeah, tell a farmer to.
No,
you know,
you wouldn't.
Tell a farmer what the hell? What, you know, why should you screw up my life? You know, because you need an extra hour, all right? So you can have an extra hour. What the hell is that all about? You
it's
know,
not an extra hour.
It's an extra hour a day. You know, come on now. You know,
it isn't an extra hour in a day. It's just that.
It's a crock of crap. They got along fine without it, you know, well before daylight savings time, all right? Some idiot decided, oh, geez, let's screw around with the clocks, okay? Well, you know, in Arizona and in other states, they don't have daylight savings time, all right? They don't screw around with the clocks at all, all right? You know, and, you know, there was a great quote by an Indian. It was up on Facebook. I loved it. I posted it. It was so good. It says only the government could figure out it could only the government could cut off a foot off of a 6 foot blanket and cut a foot off a 6 foot blanket and then sew it on to the back end of the blanket and then say it's a longer blanket. All right, I mean, it's totally true. It's an absolute stupid premise. All right, and you know manipulating people. It's manipulating the mind. Now, maybe Lila thinks so because her mind's manipulated by the time for so long, it doesn't matter to her. But to me, it bothers me every time I have to set my clock. All right? And I can't help but feel it's just a total manipulation. you know, of your sensory and biological, your biology. That's what I said.
If you can hear me out for a minute.
Yeah, go ahead, George.
Okay. What you're saying is right, Leo. I mean, businesses has used this, you know, to keep people working. But I'm looking at this from the number of days that farmers need to grow their crops. And every hour of daylight that they have is worth their their product or their field. So I'm saying
not getting
what
any more
they
daylight,
have,
George. It's the same day.
Excuse me?
I said they're not getting any more daylight than they ever had. Okay, what it's not doing anything for that. I mean,
well, you don't go by a clock. You go by the sun, and when the sun comes up, before the sun comes up, you're out. And I'm just saying that is going to change with the season. So what's going on here is that you're trying to get as much daylight out of that season as you can. So that's the only thing that they're doing.
Now, there's so much daylight allocated through the course of a day or through the course of the year. So I mean, if before daylight savings time came around, farmers got up when the sun came up and went to bed when the sun went down, all right?
The 7-Eleven or the Cumberland stores that you buy coffee for in the morning aren't open that early.
Who the hell
so
cares?
Now with daylight savings time, they
who
are,
the
so people
cares?
Can
at least
grab a coffee and a roll on the way to work.
I don't buy Cumberland crap. It doesn't bother me, but the fact is, make your own coffee, you know? Some schmuck is charging you $5 for a cup of coffee. I mean, you know, I don't need to help Starbucks, right? To me, it has nothing to do. It's just a total manipulation of time, all right? Just like the calendar is a manipulation of time, right? The Gregorian calendar, the Mayan calendar, okay?
Well, it gave us some order to our lives. It enabled us to look backwards, live in the present, and plan for the future.
We always could do that. But they
no, you couldn't really. You have to know.
We know this. We'll disagree to disagree because that this doesn't make any sense to me. A calendar is nothing more, all right, than a way to imprison you in a time. In time, I mean, time is infinite unless you're dealing with a calendar, all right? Then time becomes a box, you know, a little box on a calendar day. You know, broken down into 24 hours, right? And it's just another manipulation of time. You know, that's all it is. You know, it's a manipulation.
Well, it was manipulated like
it
that.
It imprisons you into a time.
Well, otherwise,
who's manipulating it, though?
What's that?
Who's manipulating it?
That's all.
Mankind is manipulating it, man. The governments and the people and the churches.
Everybody in the United States who has standard time agrees to the same time. That's all. So that people
can conduct. What about ourselves?
Pardon me?
What about ourselves?
Well, if you don't want to live on the calendar or the clock, you don't have to. You can do whatever you want. But other people find that that's useful. Otherwise, it wouldn't have been around for all this time, right?
Well,
so it's
useful too, it comes back to time. What is time? No time. But,
right.
You know, time, I thought about this week in trying to understand this thing.
Yeah.
That time is a figment of my imagination. Time is something that I'm locked into because of this three-dimensional reality. And either I'm going backwards, I'm going forwards. And my mind is, let's say, the computer, the manipulator, where it knows where it came from. And what it does is trying to rearrange if the pathway comes up again, how it would do it differently or how it could do differently. In the meanwhile, it is not concentrating on the present, what's going on now. And when I'm saying what's going on now, You could be sitting and talking about or thinking about your sweetheart, but in the meanwhile, a moth runs by your face and you slap it away with your hand, but you're not aware of it. But see, there's more going on in that minute than there was in my mind that wasn't real. So, you know, it's where we put that and what is time. Time is the amount of time we take away from ourselves, which is understanding the present or now, what's going on now, you know. So, you know, we could play games with ourselves. Well, you know, we can imagine this and imagine that, but it's us putting the focus on that point that we become that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, anyways, it's just part of this time thing that, you know, we manipulate the time. I do believe I manipulate my time, and I think this is something that, you know, with physics, it answers a lot of questions that I have with scalar technology and some of this some of these energy patterns.
That's true. Well, you know, it's funny though to me. It's like you don't really need the clock because in essence your body is attuned to getting up at a certain time and going to bed.
No. You do need the clock, Leo. You do need the clock here. And the clock is a biological clock. And that is a clock, when I said three-dimensional before, we are locked into this three-dimensional reality, and we have this body. And this body lives by a certain rhythm. And while it's alive, it will follow that rhythm just for survival. And this is a heartbeat, of course, I'm talking about. But understanding it is in a beat with the physical earth, you know, just like you know, our menstrual cycle on our women, are geared around a time sequence. So, you know, we are locked into that time sequence. So I'm just saying that from a biological point of view, we are locked into time that we can't break away from it. And we can alter it, time, let's say beauty and health and so forth, and aging, and, you know, slow down life. But being mortal beings, you know, we eventually we'll lose this shell or change our appearance, our consciousness, I should say. And that is the point that we're at now.
Let's put it this way. Before there was a calendar, okay, and believe me, there was a time when there was no calendar, right? There was a man lived by the day and night cycles, okay? And there was really only three. Really only five markers for time, and one was day, night, and fall, spring, fall, and summer, and fall, and winter, and those were the basic structures he went by. And before some guy decided to draw little boxes on a piece of paper and put numbers on them, say, oh, there's 30 days.
You didn't listen to what George said.
What I'm saying is that there is that prior to the time, there was a time before calendars, okay? And people lived perfectly fine without them, right? All right? And then and then all of a sudden, Lila.
But, Leo, what time are you talking about? You take a look at Stonehenge.
Oh, no, Lila's interrupting.
Calendars. These are markers of time.
Something strange, so I have no idea anymore what I'm talking about. So, you know.
Well, you missed the point.
Need no time.
There's no point to it. There's no time. You know, we're not dealing with, I mean, a calendar is a man-made thing, Lila. You're going to tell me God came down and said, here's your lovely 12-month calendar, Lila?
No, I don't think so. What George was saying was that because we're three-dimensional beings, we have our own body rhythm kind of calendar. And out of that developed the written calendar. That's all.
Oh,
that
yeah.
was just an extension
oh,
of
Oh, yeah, my body said it was
Leo.
It was the Valentine today.
The calendar is a tool for our three-dimensional existence. That's how I see it.
The calendar is a tool to screw up your brain, okay? It's a manipulation of your mind and your body and your time. And that's what it is, all right?
Leo?
Okay, George, what do you think? Leo and I disagree on this, but go ahead.
Well, I just want to try to neutralize in a sense or understand, you know, there's no right or wrong way here. But, you know, what caught my attention is Egypt. Egypt, mm-hmm. There was, 14 killings there yesterday, another riot. You know, this just happened, what was it, a month and a half ago? And then you had Libya, you had, what is going on with this world? These cycles are closing in very, very quick, you know?
Well, and, one of the was that we had American-placed dictators who were old in all these countries whose usefulness to the United States had already been served. And what they called the Arab Spring was nothing more than a revolution made here for export.
Right.
That's all.
Yeah.
But, again, they're losing the battle. They're losing that revolution because the people
have awakened.
They know the military took over, and they're saying, screw this military. We don't want a military. We want elected officials. So they're going through that process. And, you know, the amazing part about Egypt is the same thing with Syria and all these other countries. These people are willing to die. These people are out there willing to die and fight against that system, all right? And you know, we're sitting here in the United States going, Occupy Wall Street, Occupy Wall Street. Well, that's all well and good. But, you know, there ain't nobody out there that's really willing to die. All right.
To occupy Wall Street.
They're willing to sit there and get hit in the head with a spray can or something, but they're not willing to throw a Molotov cocktail or shoot anybody. You know what I mean? So not like, you know, don't say that. Like, we're in a point where, you know, Occupy Wall Street is getting nowhere because it's nonviolent. All right, and people in this country don't abide by nonviolence. We're a bunch of violent monster killers. I mean, that's how we survive as killers. Okay, we colonize, we militarize, and we go out there. The democracy is a joke in this country. We're actually in a military state. I mean, and everybody in this country is on dopamine. You know, eating turkey or something else. All right, but we're all. You know, there's nobody here. There's nobody in this country yet that's getting up and going, bullshit to this. You know, no one's going to pepper spray me or my kids. No one's going to beat me without me beating them. Okay? And that's what causes real revolutions. This stuff now isn't going anywhere. I'm sorry. It's just kind of like, everybody's getting all ready and going out. And what happened?
You know,
today is still the biggest. People are getting killed at Walmarts, for crying out loud. You know what I mean? So because, all these morons are running
killed.
In to get their.
They weren't killed. Somebody was pepper sprayed, Leo.
Well, they're getting run down. They're getting pushed around. They're getting pepper sprayed by other people. I mean, just because, they want to get a bigger screen TV. I mean, it's goddamn stupid, George. I mean, we're supposed to be occupying Wall Street, and yet, you know, all they got to do is put a flat screen TV on the television for $200, and 150 million people run down to their nearest discount store to buy one. All right, it's a joke. It's a complete joke. All right?
No, it's not a joke. It's a way of life. So you know, get up,
it's a way
get
of
off
life
these poor people's joke. Back. They don't know other way. They're happy. That's the way they want life. That's okay.
It's a joke. I'm sorry.
It's not a joke, Leo. It's happiness for them, my friend. Let them have happiness.
Happiness. This
is it hurting you? Is it hurting you, Leo?
Stooge. No. That's beat somebody up so you can get in first, you know, for Walmart. That's a real way to go, I'll tell you. But, you know, mindset.
Give them a break.
Totally out of their minds. You know, it's an insane type of system. I don't see it, but we're all.
No, but you know, you can turn it around, Leo, and just have a little compassion in your heart and look at it a little bit differently, and you can laugh. You can enjoy the humor behind it. If there's no humor, that's okay.
I laugh at some crazy person who decides that she's going to cut in line and she decides to spray everybody so she can be first at the door. And she's so damn stupid, she doesn't think she's going to get arrested for that and miss out on her big sale. I mean, you know, that's the kind of stupidity that this greed-driven society has produced. And you know, when I see stats today,
what about
50 million people are
going
to be running around, today, you know, buying up shit. You know, it just totally mind boggles me.
Well, what about
the
guy, Leo?
Yeah.
What about the guy that went around and said every time you fire a gun, an angel gets its wings?
Didn't
you hear that?
Did
you see that in the movie?
When a bell rings, an angel gets his wings.
No,
I
think it was a bullet, Leo.
that was from It's a Wonderful Life.
Wonderful Life. But you know, look at the beauty in that. We're going into that season right now, and doesn't this Thanksgiving give you the chills?
Give me the chills.
Did you go to Grandma's house?
I stayed here, Lila's house.
There you go.
We ate Lila turkey.
And pumpkin pie, I hope.
Yep.
And pumpkin pie. And
chocolate cream pie.
What's that?
And chocolate cream pie with whipped cream?
No, just pumpkin pie. I couldn't eat the crust. And I got a gluten allergy. That was a lot of fun.
So Leo feels sorry for himself because of that.
No, but what bothers me so much, George, is just that, well, you know, it's like what it bothers everybody about this time of year. You know, it's supposed to be a joy time, happy, 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 and it's really not. So it's like, you know, praise the Lord, pass the turkey, you know.
Well, it's a happy time for some people, Leo.
I wouldn't say that, Leo. Yeah, Lila, I agree there. It was a terrific holiday at my house. I mean, I was with family. We had food and laughed, and you know,
every once
in a while, you got to sit back and enjoy it.
Thanksgiving's fine, but you know,
you can choose to make it a nice holiday wherever you are. I mean,
yeah, you can.
It's not going to change the fact that if you have a good time, it's not going to hurt your values or what you care about. That's okay. That's really totally permissible, I think, to take time for yourself and your family and to enjoy yourself. I mean, there's a lot of things we can't do anything about. And it's important to connect with your family and connect with yourself. And that's what holidays are for.
And yeah, they are. I agree.
You have a right to enjoy it. And if you choose not to, that's your own problem. That's how I see it.
Yes, Lila. Anyway, we're skating on I don't know what we're skating with cream here, but I think that I to me, getting back to all right, the time no time concept is we're there. I understand it. I understand it in a sense that, you know, we should be no time. There should be no time. There should, you know, we're infinite in our spirits, and we shouldn't be messing around with that. You know, and everything that puts us in a time slot, all right, essentially becomes monetized. We're monetized, okay? And that's what the calendars do, monetize our lives, okay? Monetize us every dollar, every second's worth a dollar, you know? This show is running for, you know, approximately exactly 60 minutes, you know.
Well, I would say it monitors the synchronicity that's going on, but it is not synchronizing the project. So time just gives you some kind of reflection of the synchronicity that's going on. So, you know, here it's going beyond that point, or what's going to happen is going to happen just like things are put in motion, like thought forms are put in motion, that, you know, the apocalypse must happen now. But understand that now time has to happen to complete itself. And that's what we're up against now, but it's how we look at it. You know, you can look at it two ways, as a good time or a bad time. And I, for one, look at it as a time for a new start. You know, it's not that discharging everything that I've learned and experienced. It's now it's time to move on. And this is that neutral opportunity where I don't have to take sides. And, you know, I produced, you know, what I want. And that maybe is part of that co-creation time we're in now, between now and of, if you want to say to this 2012, the ending of time as they talk about it. But I believe the ending is now, and right now we're in a time where nothing is real. We're in a void. And what we're doing is we're being able to use that collective powers that our consciousness that we do have are recognizing or acknowledging it, and now putting it into work, putting it into gear. It's like going into space, but shifting into a second rocket, and that's what's happening to us now. We're shifting into a higher form of consciousness, but also we stay in a physical, a three-dimensional realm, or we can go beyond that. So,
do you have a sense of any kind of shift in yourself, George?
Oh yeah. Well, I see it now. I think with biologically, and I think some of the characteristics that I have as a human, and some of the things that my capabilities. Sometimes it astounds me that maybe it's the apprehension or comprehension of certain things that were in front of my eyes for so many years, and I never realized it. But it's like one thing after another, and it's not something that I'm looking for. It's something that's it's bouncing back and hitting me in the face. So I can't make judgments right now, and even though I may look for the compassion side, I do. But I'm not saying that it's right or wrong, or it's happening or it's not happening. It is happening, and yet I can't judge it other than let it experience it and go from there.
So you do have that sense that something is happening right now, and that you feel like, do you feel like you're letting go?
Well, no. Let me tell you from a more personal understanding.
Okay.
Is I can go back to last March. I was in a hospital, and I was a very sick person. And it was like a cycle I went into. And before that, I had some surgery that I postponed, which I canceled at the time. But it seems like the same situation arose recently. And, with the same consequences from, different sources and so forth. And I found it interesting that how it synchronized itself with a lot of things in my life, but also not physical life, but also the life around me and my family and so forth. And I can't say too much other than it's like it's a timing or it's a cycle that I am experiencing and my family is experiencing, and that we're all in this together. And it's like winding down. It's like a golden means triangle, where that triangle is going backwards. It's going toward the center. It's like in a mirror, looking in a mirror, and where this is basically where I'm being drawn into, and yet the outside world is traveling in the opposite direction, which is the light and the physical world that I am producing. So it's hard for me to explain other than these are some of the things that have caught my attention in the last couple of weeks.
What about the people right around you, like your family? Do you ever talk to them about this? Do they have a sense of anything?
I don't know what you mean by that. Well, my wife knows my cycles. I mean, if I'm, if I'm happy, grumpy, angry, or whatever, But I think I go through spats, and or go through things around, it's just normal stuff, like working out in the yard or having to do certain things. Some are good, some are bad.
But you haven't noticed any real significant differences in the pattern of your life?
Well, I've knocked a lot of my activities out completely. It's like the rhythms, or it's the rhythms that I've had over the years. It's routines, I should say, old routines, that I'm catching myself in these routines and I'm breaking them, or looking at them a little bit differently, or just discharging them. That you know, you don't, you take it for granted. You don't think about them, but you know, it's being more conscious of the present, what's going on now, that I catch these things, and I'm able.
When was that supposed to? When was this no time supposed to begin? When did
I believe it was about. It was, I think, 98.
Really?
It could have been 89 or 98. I'd have to take a look at my records, my notes. But it goes back into the 90s. And
well,
it was a time that was projected. I think it may have been 1989, where between now and 2012 was at no time.
Oh.
We invented a no time.
That's fascinating.
I'd have to check the notes, Leo, but we did a couple of shows on that a couple of years ago. And
right.
Breaking that down, yeah.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I think if it was even 89 or if it was 98 or whatever, it was still, those are significant years for me, where there are jump-off points in my life. But I think that, those are significant jumping points. So I don't know if the I don't know exactly what we were supposed to be in, but it seemed like in 89, let's say, I jumped and there was a void there. I remember it very well, actually.
Mm-hmm.
I think now, but there was a moment in my life when filled with anxiety, filled with great decisions, and I was having a continual dream that scared me every night for quite some time until I understood how to overcome it, and it was a dream of a void, of a cliff. I was at the edge of a cliff. Looking down, and not seeing any way over it, not seeing any way to get over this, but I could see, at a distance, there was another shoreline or another bit of land, but it was very far away. But I could see it. But I was standing between this huge void of darkness, and I had this reoccurring dream for a number of days, and it caused me a lot of anxiety. Until one night, I was able to decide. I had this dream, same dream, but I decided I would build in my mind a bridge over the void, all right, to get to that other side. No matter how far that was, I was building that bridge. And I did, and in my mind, I created an entire bridge, all right, over this void, and walked across, got to the other side. And once I did that, I didn't have the dream again, didn't have a problem there. And my life, took a different direction, but a more positive direction. So that was. That was a significant time. And again in 90 and 2000 or so, 98, 99, was when I got into television and developing TV and radio and whatnot, lectures and what I was doing. And I developed something brand new there, another jumping point, but to now. So I guess those were significant times, and whatever time, no time began, it seemed like every 10 years I was going through some significant change. And again, now we're at that another precipice. We're now at another breakoff point in 2011. You know, it seems that we're entering another period. Not that I'm having those reoccurring dreams, but I've noticed a different attitude in my own self, my own writing, my own attitude. It's just kind of like been very clouded, very, very, very strange, especially the last few months with all of the and as I noticed them, I noticed Occupy Wall Street coming along. I noticed the revolutions coming along. I noticed conversations, articles, and so on. And it seems like that malaise, but that confusion is everywhere. It's not just in me. And maybe I'm picking up on some form of unity consciousness here.
I think that's how you could look at it, Leo. But I agree with you 100%. How about you, Lila?
Well, I was listening to what Leo had to say, and my sense of myself in the last few months is like a slight irritability. I see all these things happening. Well, I broke my ankle. That's probably why.
One part.
Now I have a horrible cold. So the last couple of months I've been not physically fit the way I was before. I feel more vulnerable, I think. And I guess that's what's caused my irritability. But I look at all these changes that are happening, and I hope they'll be good. I see the changes in the other parts of the world, and I hope that the people get what they are looking for. And
their freedom. I hope they get that.
But my feeling is that the people that control this world, and there's a small group of them, and the Wall Street people are among them, they seem to be so many steps ahead of everybody that they already are on to how to deal with what's happening. And they have a plan for that. So no matter which way you turn, you're manipulated in this world. And the one thing is that we'll escape that, and that's what I hope for.
But I think that I have to bring up that quote that Brzezinski stated, and Brzezinski was the architect for the global New World Order and all that. But he stated in the last year that they are seeing right now a period of time where of a global awakening.
He didn't plan for this.
That they didn't plan for. They didn't really see this happening. And politically, it can't be controlled, and it can't be controlled in any way. By government or by anything, so it's just happening.
Uh-huh.
I could
see that, because I see the alternative that's going on right now. You know, we are being bombarded by devastation tenfold.
Oh. Oh, yeah.
You take a look at what happened over there in Japan. Those power plants.
Yeah.
Right. And they were talking about the radiation, how it's going around the world.
That's right.
I think, what is it, up to 300 or 400 rads, on the West Coast?
Oh, it's that all the way through into Europe.
And they don't know about it.
And they're keeping it very...
And I think the point that Leo was making with these people running into Walmart buying a large screen TV is that they don't recognize it as just that all of that stuff is to distract them from what their real purpose is here in the world. You know, we're so controlled and manipulated by these diabolical entities that are here that we don't really live for ourselves. We live for the person who wants to sell us the widescreen TV.
And keep our monthly cable bill going.
So we're in chains, mental and spiritual chains.
Yeah, exactly. So people are tied to their technology.
Well, let's look at this in a little slower motion and take a look what the human body has been able to do. And, this goes from our past to civilizations of antiquity has recorded this. But the influence of radiation and so forth, we've been able to manipulate our DNA, to put up with the environment or to live within the environment.
Right.
And it's just part of the abilities that we as humans have, that we can alter our DNA and actually for our survival. And I do believe that there are ways for us to compensate effects that you know, radiation would have, and most of these other diseases, viral infections. We are becoming immune to these, and we're going to be able to overcome these. And one of them is because of the energies we're receiving from our sun, and second of all, because of the energies and how they have altered, in a sense. Now our whole magnetic polarity of our solar system has changed from individual planets themselves, even to the sun, that we are just part of experiencing different biological happenings, just like the codexes that actually are like computer programs within our DNA. We have more of them being activated by the young ones that are being born now, and they have actually more options for them in dealing with the environment, is just one example, but also cognition, you know, in different realities or different levels of three-dimensional realities. So I'm saying Mother Nature, I think, can compensate for anything that us humans or the Dracones or, you know, whoever the evil ones are, you know, can put out, because they also have to abide by the same laws. And, you know, they have the ability and the right to come along with the good ones to do to change lines, if you'd want to call it that, or stay where you are. But, you know, you have to understand that you are a product of your creation. What you imagine, you become part of, and you co-create that.
Yeah.
Well, that's true.
I agree with that. but essentially, that's what I was getting at, is that in the last 3 months, 4 months, we've been seeing this rise in consciousness around the world, and I've noticed that, you know, I was paying a lot of attention to that October 28th day, and because it seemed like there was a wave developing in August and September that led to the beginning of the Occupy, that started up the Egyptian overthrow again. Okay, the Syrian overthrow, the and all of these other countries, and we're seeing it. We're just seeing it. We're there's no question that we're seeing this wave of human consciousness, this wave of activity happening that has no stopping it. You know, there's no stopping it really now. But where it's going to lead, I don't know. But what's making me angry is that it's there, but it doesn't seem to really have any direction, and other than just being there, you know. And I don't know if that's good, bad, or not. Maybe that's just the way it is. Maybe that's what ascension is, you know, just to raise us all, you know, without any understanding of where we're going, just a matter of raising our consciousness. You know, we have a
void. It's that void that you've talking about before.
It could be.
We do have a caller here that just called. Let me see. We can put him on the air. Good evening, 520. Hello.
Hello. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes. Nice and clear. Hi.
Yes, I want to say hello, George. How are you?
Hi, Nikki. I'm fine.
I wanted to address something about what you said about the time, no time. And it's so funny because you know my situation of me crossing over, me having a near-death experience. And I can't tell you how on the money you are of time and no time. One of the things that I realized in coming back from near death, I always used to be a very punctual person. Everything was about time. Being on work, at work on time, being at parties on time, whatever it was, I was on time. When I was brought back from my near death, there was no time. There was like an elasticity of time, is the best way I can explain it. So when I was brought back, I have never been able to keep up with the way everybody here on this plane keeps up with time. It's sort of the running joke about the fact that I just don't have a clock. Not even if I look at it all day, I don't have a clock because my experience has been something else, and I've never been able to lock back in to the way others work here on this earth, you might say. As far as the Leo was saying something about his crossing over in the dream, and those were, to me, very significant. We all have dreams when we were children. And maybe we didn't understand it then, but those dreams, like Leo's dream of the bridge at the edge of the cliff, those dreams were preparatory dreams. This is what I believe anyway. They were preparatory dreams to what is about to be. And this is my belief. It's not to say that I'm right. It is my belief, because one of the things that I'm noticing is the people that I'm talking to are all talking about dreams they had when they were young, and they're recalling it now, which is unbelievable. The other thing that I'm noticing that speaks and addresses the time, no time. You know how they say as you get older, time seems to accelerate?
Yes.
And for the young, it never seems to pass. It's entirely opposite now. If you speak to a lot of young people, they'll tell you how they feel time is accelerating. We are in an acceleration right now, like we've never been before.
Without a doubt, yes, without a doubt.
You know, there is a rise in anxiety. There is a rising in vulnerability. All of what is happening around the world, including the, you know, Wall Street stuff, everything in the Middle East, all of this is distractions. And I'm not trying to sound New Age, because, George, you know me. I'm not a New Age person. I'm not a hard Christian person. I could probably consider myself a spiritual person, but I'm not locked into anything, and I'm very open to it all, because we don't have an understanding of it all. We're very confused of what information we are recently getting more and more from physicists, scientists of all different kinds. This confusion is rocking our world. Some are putting their heads in the ground. They're ignoring it. They don't want to know anything else except the moment that they're buying their TV set from the Walmart, let's say. they're locked in. And they have to stay there because everything else would rock their world. This is, you know, a set of people that you have. Then you have the set of people that are very, very aware of their moment, aware of the time, aware of what is happening. They're not doing any suppositions, because we really can't. We can't. We're coming into a time that this is going to come at us in every direction. This is going to come at us. Say that again.
Quantum consciousness.
Exactly.
Quantum reality.
Exactly. But there are those that are very, very aware of it. There are those that are trying to run away from it. And there are those that are getting into the darker realm of it. It's a horribly confusing period to pinpoint any of this. It's literally locking yourself into, sort of like locking yourself into one religion and saying that religion has all the answers. We can't. You we
know,
can't do that.
You know, Nikki, the discernment that I use, I think, in looking at that is...
George, let me interrupt. We've got 43 seconds left on the air, but I'd like Nikki to stay on, please. You know, just don't hang up. And George, and we can continue this discussion a little bit. But I just wanted to mention to people who are listening, you can call in at 646-915-9505 and hear the rest of this program. or just pick us up in the archives. Thank you, Nikki. Just keep, go ahead. George, Nikki, go ahead.
Okay. Go ahead, George.
What were we saying? Oh, geez. Discernment. Oh, yes.
That's where we're at.
Yes. One thing I will do now, and I look to, is that I look for my emotional body, my heart, for my reasoning. I don't look to my head at all. My head doesn't know what the hell's going on. My heart
right.
does because it is in contact with the world. So I have to go with my heart and with my emotional body, and I've never gone wrong. And I think that is part of this experience that this new cycle that we're in now, we're experiencing, but is a feminine energy which is grounding us right to Mother Earth into the physical three dimensions that we are. So I'm just saying that I have to go with my emotional body, with my heart, and wherever my heart takes me, I will go.
Exactly. And that's what I think those dreams when we're young, those experiences when we're young, that we're sitting there. You know how often I sat there and I said, what am I supposed to do with all these experiences that have been put in my hands? And I have no idea what I am to do with it. And I came to one conclusion, and it's one word. When all of this comes down, it's all about discernment.
There you go. There you go, hon.
I'd love
to have you come back sometime and talk on the show about some of the experiences in your life.
I'd love to.
Oh.
Nikki
and I have been friends for, it's almost 20 years now, isn't it?
It's almost 30 years, George.
I'm sorry. Yeah.
No, it's like 26 years to be,
yeah.
You know, on the dot. So we, yeah. And George would take me through conversations that I'd sit there with my mouth wide open, jaws to the floor, and there were times that I was trying to catch up to everything that George was saying to me. I understood it on one level. George was talking to me on another level. And I think maybe 26 years later, I'm closer to the level of understanding George. It only took me 26 years.
No.
It's a very beautiful thing when you focus on the process of it. It really is. If you focus on the process of what happened, it's really a beautiful thing. It's very human, and it's very supposedly what we're supposed to experience right now. And hopefully we're not going to be doing this too much longer because it's really exhausting.
Yeah, there was two things I'd like to just ask you, one to mention to you. But there was a fascinating guy, I don't know if George is referring to yet or not, Zell Ungel's work on the Mayan calendar. And he talks about this time. And what you were saying was how people are burying their heads and how they're freaking out because there's so much information coming at them. That they can't handle it.
And he talked about that.
And he spoke about this time now as being the time when we are, people will be like, he brought up the analogy of Scarlett O'Hara in Gone with the Wind, where she, you know, she would faint or she would say, I can't think about that now. I have to, you know, I can't think about that
I'll think
now.
About that tomorrow.
I'll think about it tomorrow.
Right.
And it was brilliant because this is exactly what's happening now. And like you said, people rushing to Walmart or people rushing, or just rushing anywhere, just to amuse themselves or distract themselves from what's happening.
Multitasking is a good example of that.
Now, you also mentioned one other thing that I wasn't really quite certain. When you said discernment was the word. Discernment in the sense of, maybe I'm confused in that word, but discerning in what way? What do you?
Okay, and this is not to take it into a religious theme. I'm talking about discernment of all principalities. I'm talking about discernment of good versus evil. I'm talking about there will be both coming for us to make decisions on. What will feel right to most will feel very wrong to others. And that discernment, those dreams, those experiences that we have had in our life will be sort of like knocking on the door of our brain and our heart, and they're going to be saying, remember, remember, remember. We can go against those things.
And so are you saying that we'll have more clarity? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, there will be those with more clarity, those who stay centered, those who stay focused, those who stay spiritually open, those who follow their heart, like George was saying. Your heart really knows how to tell you right from wrong. Your heart tells you what feels good, what feels bad. Sometimes you go against your heart and you find yourself making decisions. You know, you're finding yourself making decisions that your heart was telling you one thing, your mind took you to another place. So the place of decision has to lie with those things, those dreams, those experiences that we have been given as far back as being a child. And I may be totally out to lunch here, but that's the way I've got to live it. This is the way I've got to follow it, because I know that I've been given experiences for a reason. What it will be is yet to come. But even now, I follow my heart. Just like what George was saying, you have got to come to a time where you listen intensely to your heart. You listen, and you cannot follow somebody or people who are getting all emotionally tied in, because either it's a really good group, a really good movement. This guy is a really good speaker, really good narrator. This guy seems like a really good person. Not everything good, not everything that presents itself as good, may be good.
That's true.
And that's where discernment is going to come into play. And those experiences that you have is what I was trying to say, Leo, about remember those experiences, because it'll become crystal clear when you need it, at the moment you need it.
You know, you say that, and I just wanted to say that that particular dream, solving that dream, has been allowed me to every time that I'm put at in a position where I see a void or I see a gap that I can't, that seems almost impossible to cross over. I'm reminded of that dream, and as strange as it was, I knew that I built that bridge across that void, and it was in the darkness as well, or the dream was black, you know, so I could see it. I just could feel it and feel my way.
And that's what you'll be brought to do down the road, and that's probably why that dream was given to you. When you figured it out, the dream went away. It was sort of like it kept knocking, kept knocking, kept knocking until you figured it out. And once you figured it out, that transition took place where you didn't need the lesson anymore in your dreams. And
now,
that's what you'll have.
It's a personal question, but I'm very curious. The near-death experience that you had, were you actually on the other side? Were you actually... You knew you were dead. How did you come back?
Oh, yeah. It went into different phases. It went into, at first I went out of body. I'm listening to everybody talk about me as if I'm dead. You know, we've lost her. We've lost her. And I'm looking at everyone, what they're doing, how they're scrambling. I'm at the same time experiencing. That's why I'm so excited about some of the programs that I'm seeing. You know, especially this new program, Illusion, or what is it? No, The Fabric of the Cosmos. I'm so excited about this because as intensely difficult as it is to understand, and it is, I mean, especially, I have a very simple mind. I understand a lot of big pictures, but my mind is very simple. I don't understand it scientifically. So when they're talking about, you know, that you could be here and being there, you're in a multidimensional life, I experienced that. I experienced watching people talk about me as if I was dead. I experienced watching people cry when they were told what was happening to me or what had happened to me. I also, as soon as I realized that realization, I was sucked into another realm. It was like I was being, for everything that I was experiencing, the very moment I was figuring it out, oh, I'm dead, I went into another dimension. And in that dimension, there was pitch black, and it was, I remember being terrified. I have never understood what it was to be in a totally black void until that very nanosecond. But the minute that I was feeling the fear of the darkness and the void and all that was happening, I was sucked out again and into another dimension where I was going through a tunnel. Then as I go through the tunnel, and it was beautiful feeling and emotion and everything that everyone talks about, then I see the light. There is an instant recognition, instant. I don't know how to tell you, but I understand how all these Egyptian ruler who wanted everybody to worship Ra, he saw something. He saw a beautiful, bright light, a light that we couldn't look upon in our earthly body. But he saw it, and so he brings that down to earth as God. I feel that that's how he interpreted God, as this big, bright light, and he makes it the all-seeing eye, because I understand that. I understand it because as soon as I saw the light, I had an instant recognition without doubt, without question, of it being God. Now,
why didn't you stay there?
Because I was told that I wasn't to be there, that it was a mistake that I was there. Believe me, if you could imagine an angelic form, angelic light, begging not to be brought back to earth, not to be sent back, begging in tears. I remember that very clearly. And there, I was told that I was to ask, that I had to go back, but that I would be allowed to ask any question and that they would give me an answer. And that question I would take down with myself along with the answer. Now, this all came to me before the Hubble ever, you know, came out with the fact that we have black holes. I guess it was theory here and there, but when all this happened to me, I was a very young person. I was also nowhere considered scientific. I was, like I said, a very simple mind. I was a student who couldn't be taken past, you know, adding and subtracting. You do that, you know, you rock my world if you did anything past that. And here now I am in this realm where everything I am seeing is in mathematical equation. All of it I understood in that realm. When I saw growth, I saw it in mathematical equations. When I heard music, I heard it in mathematical equations. When I was told to ask whatever question it was that I wanted to ask, when I tell you this, you got to remember my mind is very simple. I was into dating. I was into drinking. I was into going out. I was into having fun. So my mind was never into, you know, the more elevated state of studies. So when they said you could ask whatever question, and one of the things that you'll find in near death is that the moment you have a question, the answer is already inserted within you immediately. I don't know how to explain it, but you think the question, you got the answer. You think the question, you got the answer. And it goes on and on like that. So of all questions that I could have asked, I ask, before I'm sent down, is there such a thing as a black hole? With that moment, I am taken to the edge. I'm taken to the event horizon of the black hole. I am looking into it, and I am seeing the mathematical equation of why that black hole works, what it's all about, what it is supposed to be. And I am in total awe. I'm stunned. I mean, I'm just, it's sort of like experiencing an exhilaration beyond words. It's sort of like having the magic of being, and that's what it is. It's the magic of being omniscient. And that's what happens when you're in that near-death state. You're omniscient. With every question, you have all these answers. And just when I'm in this awe of feeling the black hole, looking at the answers, looking at the equations, understanding what the black hole was supposed to be about, within that very moment, I am sucked backwards into my body. And I cannot tell you the years of depression that left me in. And I'm sitting there beating myself up when I'm brought back. Why, of all questions, did you ask about the stupid black hole? And now I realize it years later. I realize it. And the first time was when I was watching the news. I'm in tears watching the news because I'm still so depressed that I'm alive. I'm depressed that I can't talk to anybody about my near death because my doctor told me it was merely lack of oxygen, hallucinations taking place. And now I'm questioning my own experience, an experience that changed me, changed my life. I'm questioning it. And as I'm watching the television, the news is on. And the very first thing I see is they're now bringing in pictures. This is years later after I've had my experience. They're now bringing in the first pictures that the Hubble is now sending back to Earth. And guess what they found out? That the black holes really do exist. That was my confirmation that I wasn't crazy, that I wasn't insane, that I and all the things that I learned from the experience, scientists are now coming to the realization of what it is and what it could be. And it's so funny because one scientist said it as the best way you could possibly explain what they're locking into now scientifically about the universe. He says, what we are experiencing, what we are learning, is so vast, so great, so multidimensional, so big that we don't know how to explain it.
Nikki?
And that, yes?
Could you say that your black hole or a black hole is actually a tunnel to another?
Without question, it is a portal. It's to another dimension. It is that simple. It is a transport. It is simple.
We've talked about the connection between all the star systems and our sun, and Sirius is our sister star. And for years, I've talked about, you know, the knowledge that we've had that our sun is a black hole, or it's a time portal, or it's a energy vortex to our sister star, but it is a transporting device that takes us into different realms of reality. Do you agree with that?
I do. I can agree with that. And here's why I can, without knowing scientifically that that is true. It is because the complexities of what I saw, And mind you, if you ask me to give you the equations of why and how it all works, I cannot do it. That was all taken away from me. I was told that that would be taken away from me. No. I got the bigger picture. Because the bigger picture is what I focus on.
Yeah.
Can you tell me how many years ago did this happen to you?
I was 26 years old. I am now 59.
You're my age.
So I was young. I was very angry. I was very rebellious. I didn't believe in God. And if there was a God, I was very, very angry at the God that did exist, and I didn't want to have anything to do with that God. And I remember, and I've told George this story, I remember, and this is to warn you, be careful what you ask for, be careful what you wish for. Be very careful, because it will be given to you in a way that you may not expect it. And I remember being so angry, so rebellious that somebody had said something to me about God, and I said, I'm going to try to clean it up a little bit in my language. I said, when they said something about God, I said, well, if there is, God, and I did give an expletive, I said, he's going to have to do more than slap me in the face. He's going to have to kick me in the ass. And I got an ass kicking within three to four days. Like, you cannot believe that's when my near death took place. And it changed me.
Were you in an accident, Nikki?
No. I had told the doctor that I had some problems in bleeding. And he was literally just supposed to just cauterize a cyst that was in me, and he didn't listen to me, and he said, no, this is a very simple procedure, and all we're going to do is cauterize it, and the long and the short of it was they couldn't control the bleeding, and so I was literally dying in his office. They had to call the paramedics to bring me back. This guy was literally, when I finally did, was brought back, I remember watching this man tremble. I mean, he shook. He shook really bad because he knew that he had made a big mistake. And if it wasn't because of what the paramedics did and so on and so forth to control the bleeding, I probably would be dead except for the fact that it was not supposed to be. And so no matter what loss of control the doctor had, the divine had another.
There you go. Yeah.
You know, he had another plan for me. And my frustration has grown through the years. George knows. I've been very frustrated. Why is this knowledge given to me? Why is this experience given to me? And what do I do with it? And I've stopped beating my head.
Yeah, Nikki, you have to admit, though, what you've experienced since that time has really been eye-opening and life-opening for you.
Very much. And it's so funny that it's all about one word. And that was one of the things that I found in near death. When I crossed over, I kept saying, oh, my God, it was all so simple. Oh, my God, it was so simple. What we have done in our lives to complicate every moment of our 24 hours in a day is unbelievable, what we as humans can do. When I realized the simplicity of the knowledge that I had learned in my near death, it was, in more ways than one, it was just unbelievable. It's like finding out that you have just now done 100 things to get to one point when all you had to do is take one step. That's all. And all of this, I have come to understand all of my experiences, all of the things that I've been trying to rack my brain and figure out. It's all about one thing, discernment. And that's what we're going to need at the end. And I know that sounds simplistic. I understand how simplistic and insane it sounds that we should live our lives only to come out at the end of this with just one simple little answer.
I
commend you for that.
Thank her for sharing.
And I like that word. I was afraid you were going to say love, you know?
No. Here's the deal, and this is what I'm going to. There is no question that when you cross over, you feel unconditional love. There is no question that when you are brought back, you want to keep this unconditional feeling, this bliss, this, you know, euphoria inside of you. But then you have to deal with people here on Earth. There is no way you're going to feel unconditional love in your human body. There is no way. As hard as I wanted to try, as hard as I wanted to stay in the bliss, there is no way. And the best way I can describe it is if you can watch a man kill your child right before your eyes and still feel love for that man, you're no longer in your earthly body. If you could still feel love for somebody who does so wrong to you without wanting to kill him, without wanting to hurt him, without wanting to hate him, that's unconditional love. We're not going to be able to do that. Not till we cross over.
I believe you. I certainly believe you. Because I, no matter how hard I try to grasp for that unconditional universal love, even though I have it in my mind as an ideal, in practice I find it totally impossible. And
it is.
Trust me, I
have strived to do that because I felt if God gave me the gift of letting me feel what unconditional love was all about, then I have to strive to keep myself there because I was given a gift, and therefore I can't just toss it away, and therefore I have to love all man with unconditional love, no matter what they do. Just look at them with love. Well, that's horse pucky.
He gave you a clue that, which is what you just said. You have to be dead in order to do that.
Yeah, because you cannot. You could not watch somebody harm somebody you love and feel unconditional love. I mean, you can't even fathom that.
Well, I think I'm often brought to the. I often wind up thinking of this Christ consciousness, and what happens when you know if you look at Christ on the cross, that he had not. I mean, he was dead. He was gone. He knew he was gone. His body was broken and everything else. And he was supposedly fulfilling his purpose. So, but at the end, you know, he said, "Forgive them because they don't know what they're doing." And his last words were, "I commend my spirit to you." So, he, in the end, suffered everything, but only when he was dying or had died, or even his body had already left, his spirit had already left his body. Was he able to utter those final words, okay, of forgiveness? And I personally, having gone through so many things in my life, and having so many conflicts with so many different people, I've never been able to bring myself to any level of a mass forgiveness for what they do. If anything, is more of a mass condemnation of what people are doing. So,
exactly. That's the human part of us.
That's our human element. And I can't deny that part of me, no matter what I do. I can't, and in fact, I find myself, as I get older, relishing the humanity of my humanity rather than beating on it and denying it, you know. So I smoke. Jeez, you know, beat me up, kill me. I'm wicked. So I have a drink. oh, geez, kid beat me up. Everything that you do that's human, having sex or having wants or desires, is wrong. No.
Can I jump in here?
Because I know that once I leave this body, those are gone. Okay. I mean, once you no longer have a body, it's not likely you're going to want to feed your face. You know. So it's like to me, I just relish being human, and all that entails until I'm no longer human. You know. Are no longer in a body. So
correct.
Bill, if I can jump in here, I want to continue your thought with what you were saying about the passion of Christ and how he died for people's sins. They don't have to die. Now, it's through that
made no sense to me, George. Never did. But go ahead.
Well, maybe it's due to the passion of what Christ did gives us the ability to have compassion on our fellow beings. And, you know, I could understand what you're saying. I mean, people do wrong things. But, you know, it's through compassion that I can always find something good in a person, and I always have and I always do. And I've said this over and over again that, you know, I don't care if you're my enemy. If you have blue eyes and I like the color of the blue eyes that you have, I mean, I could find some good in you. And if I look anywhere around a person or look at a person, I could find something good in that person that I could find in other people. But also, if who am I to throw the first stone in a sense? I mean, we all are human. We all experience human things. But, you know, we also have the ability to forgive one another and have compassion.
No, but you're fishing in the wide ocean there. That area doesn't really exist in this realm.
All right.
It's like Nikki said. If you're looking at somebody who just murdered your child, all right, you know, willfully murdered them in some heinous way, all right. Hey, I'm not gonna say, oh, it's okay, Charlie. You know, love you. Let me kiss you. And God bless you, may you go to heaven. No, I'm gonna look for the nearest hatchet and try to chop the guy's brains in. You know what I mean? That would be my first impression.
Your automatic reflex that would take over as a human, and that really is understood. I mean, you would be so surprised as to all the things that is understood. Where I have, I think. And I'm not as saintly as George. I can't look at everybody as oh, you know, there's something good. I sometimes see evil, and evil can be very evil. So I'm not saying that person can't have this moment of good or so on and so forth, but when you feel evil, and there are those people that are like that, when you feel evil, I'm not as saintly as George. I will feel and I will walk away. Will I stay in their energy field? Absolutely not. And that is not meant to, that is not meant to sound new agey,
but
everything.
I know that you've known George a long time, but so you know that he's not adverse to saying, that son of a bitch just screwed me, or that, you know, that is.
Yeah. But you right. See, that's what I was trying to say. I now have very clear, strong feelings that come through, and when I feel evil, I will push away from that energy. I will not see evil for good or slightly good or has a little modicum of good. I see evil, I feel it, I walk away.
If you don't feel that, that's just natural to have the fright or flight, you know, or fight or flight rather feeling. And with me, if I see absolute feel danger, then I have to respond to that and either run. But if I can't run, by God, I'm going to have to fight because it may cost my life.
That's
and, it,
right.
and at the same time, if I see or feel evil and have it and can walk away from it, avoid it, then by God, I'm going to do that. But
that's
if
right.
I can't avoid it and it's in my life and it comes to my life, then I have to confront it and I have to try to get away from it. You know,
exactly.
I know in my heart that I can't convert it. You know, I know that I can't forgive it because evil is as black as that black hole, and it just sucks everything in with it. And it takes everything that you have to break away from it. I know because I've been there and I've seen it. And
use your own personal discernment.
Discernment and deciding, you know, if you, you know, to me, there's two roads to travel. It's either the dark side or the light side. Mm-hmm. And I choose light over darkness any day of the week because, you know, I can see where I'm going. I can feel where I'm going.
You have to get to know it though, Leo.
Well, I do.
Nikki, exactly.
I don't know that I agree about getting to know it. I think, George, that even you are capable of feeling when something is dark or wrong and it doesn't feel right, doesn't feel good. Does that mean you should sit there and see if your instincts are wrong and so on and so forth? Sometimes questioning your instinct gets you deeper into the darker side without you knowing it.
Nikki, the point that I wanted to bring up is you're right. You're right. Now, there was times over the years that I've talked about some of the ancient Sumerians and all planet cultures. And you didn't want to hear any of that, I think.
I know. It's true.
Some of Zechariah Sitchin's work. And, you know, for you, in your own discernment, decided, hey, wait a minute, this is not
you're
for
right.
me. And yet you've closed, that didn't close me off for years, but we lost contact for years. And it was only through time that you were understanding what I was saying, and you are right. Sometimes I was a bit forceful, I think, with knowledge and with information, but it would take a while for you to catch on or look
at
it from a point of view.
It's like what I was saying. I am a very simple mind. I had the experiences that I experienced. Do I understand it in a scientific
okay.
In a scientific way?
Yeah.
No. You were so over my head with all the knowledge you had. Excuse me. I'm now starting to... Yeah, Lila and I are... By the way, I've got something for you, Lila, that you could try. It's called tahini. You know, the sesame...
Yeah.
Hold on 1 second. It's a sesame seed paste.
Yeah.
And if you...
We actually have some in our cupboard.
Yes. If you hold it to... You take 2 tablespoons. If you hold it to the back of your throat, which I'm going to do right after we get off the phone, it'll calm that tickle. Especially right before you do a broadcast, the tahini will calm the tickle. So when you do a broadcast... I would even have that right there next to you in case you or Leo get into a coughing jag, like what's happening to me now, and do that.
Oh, thank you for sharing that.
Yeah,
thank you very much for sharing that. I
was given that to do when I was in the middle of nowhere with no access to doctors, and my throat was very sore. I couldn't stop coughing. And I was told to take this by a bunch of Middle Eastern people, and I did, and I couldn't believe it even stops the soreness in your throat. Like almost instantly.
Oh, that's good to know.
So what do you do? Just take a teaspoon of it and put it?
No, not a teaspoon, a tablespoon. And you're going to hold it as close to the back of your throat as much as, at least a full minute, as much as you can. And then you could swallow it, then take in another tablespoon. And I don't know what it is, but there is something very calming about it, and it takes away that horrible burn, and when you have that sore throat, it takes it away, and I cannot recommend that to you enough. I'm not a tahini type person. I don't like it, but if it stops the pain and if it stops the tickle at odd moments, I'll do it.
That's a good idea.
Well, we really appreciate all that you've shared with us this evening,
yeah, really,
especially your personal journey to the other side. It was very moving to hear you talk about it and to talk about what happened to you when you journeyed back and how you were affected by it.
It never leaves you. When you've had something that happens to you like that, it never leaves you. Never.
That's true.
And you could go through a whole mess of people telling you you're crazy, it didn't happen, but when something changes who you are, changes and turns you around, 180 degrees, then it's something that you have to hold in. And what I was trying to finish with George, he's right. I did fight him because I remember, and I don't know if you remember, George, when I called you one time and I said to you, why the hell do you even want to talk to me? I don't know if you remember that. Because George is he's full of knowledge. But he's got knowledge in him in a whole different way, realm, than I do. He retains things. He's more scientifically in understanding. I'm very simplistic. I get the bigger picture, but I don't necessarily understand the equation. And George understood.
Is it an equation or what? I think it's maybe the experience of life.
Well, for me, I know what the experience was. But when George was trying to, introduce me to certain areas, I was going, oh my God, no, it can't be, no, because all my relation was trying to understand what happened to me in near death. But I also knew that the way I wanted to keep in touch was to try to figure out this damn Bible that I can't understand.
It seemed to me, Nikki, that you received a very special kind of intervention.
I did.
That changed your life.
Not just with God, but with the people that came into my life, George being one of them. And I will give a great deal of credit to a lot of what I put together to George. And also to the people I was doing Bible study with, because I happened to be put with a very, very serious group of people who did real serious Bible study. We're not talking about church-going Bible study. We're talking about breaking the Word down and getting into the meat of the Word. And that was not a comfortable thing. And then you start realizing that, hey, wait a minute, George said this, but that sort of connects to the Bible, but that isn't really biblical, but that it's all connected.
At the
end of the day, you can't even explain to a person how it's all connected. They somehow have to trip and fall until they realize it's all connected. And at the end of it, discernment is your only.
Because when you understand the root of these words, and you understand the etymology, then it completely opens all the doors. It's like, holy cow,
Exactly.
Adam
and Eve was my big first lesson. And what happened in that Garden of Eden was a big, big lesson. And it connects. It connects to the stuff that Sinchin was talking about. It connects to the stuff that Van Doneghan was talking about. It connects. It all connects. And that is where we're going to need our discernment, because this is the show is about to come down.
As long as it's so fundamentally, so literally, and look at it from a totally as a metaphorically that these words are these parables were designed to contain a remarkably huge picture, an infinite picture of life and humanity and so on. And like you said, for most people, myself included, we understand the big picture. It's the minutia that we get lost, you know.
And that's what all that we're seeing on the news, that's all the stuff that's happening with Wall Street, that's happening in the Middle East, that's happening here, that's happening there, our mortgage crisis, that people are losing their homes. This is meant to keep people confused in the minutia, and that's what it is. It's minutia.
That's right. And that's from our true purpose here. That's,
exactly.
That's
and
what
I,
it's
and
all
I think
about.
We're about ready to
end our show.
No, I think we're about ready to understand where we're headed and where we're going.
There was one thing that George said that, George, I need to ask you about. At the beginning of the show, you said, and maybe I misheard it, did you say something about that you feel that there's 11 years more to go? What was it that I heard or misheard?
No, I think from the beginning, 11 years in this cycle that we're in right now, we're in the last cycle of this 11 years. I think it started in 89, is sure. I'm not sure. But
why do you feel it's 11 years? Why do you feel it's 11 years, I guess, is my question.
Well, I don't know. I think I'm connecting that with some of the solar activity and the solar cycle. And I think it was connected with that. And
1999
we're coming to a peak with that cycle next year. And right now we're experiencing that. Even, you take a look at some of these weather conditions of our planet, and the electromagnetics has been altered quite a bit, and it's just part of the cycle that we're in. But it also adds to this time and no time that, you know, nothing is real, but everything is real, and even Mother Nature itself has got to reset itself. And I think that's going to be happening, you know, maybe after this cycle, this sun cycle, which will end next year. But also it's a time that we do make the alignment with our with the galactic center, that is more from a physical aspect, from the three-dimensional aspect of this Earth, and you know its surroundings with the magnetics,
Did you hear something that Newt Gingrich said yesterday? I found really curious. He was asked by the reporters that were asking him questions. He was asked. Because they were asking them all these questions, political questions, and one of the reporters said, what question that you have not heard any of us ask you, are you more concerned about than anything else that is happening in the country? And what do you call it, that initial where the solar flares, once it throws out those flares, it's a, what are the initials that, anyway, what was it? Yeah, he was saying something, but it had initials to it, forgive me for drawing a blank. And
yeah.
It's those waves that come from the solar flares. And so he was saying, of all the questions that I've not asked that has me nervous more than anything is the, you know, the waves that we are about to get from the solar flares. And what do you call it? You know, I wish to God I could remember. I hate bringing something up without remembering it. But it was the waves.
Electromagnetic frequencies.
But there is an initial.
But it's like a solar storm.
Yeah,
but there's an initial. Yeah, there is an initial too. There's three initials to it. And anyway, and I just stood there and I went, wow, somebody actually said it. Somebody actually said it. But I was really surprised that he admitted it, you know. That was the one thing. We're not talking about it, and we should be nervous about it.
Well, we have talked a bit about it over the years here, and understand that's enough for
you
another
have.
Show here. But we get into the heart program where, you know, we humans, what we're trying to do is shield our Earth, you know, from these explosions on the sun. I mean, we have been able to shield some of them, but part of the problems we have with our satellites that are blown right out because of these storms. But we can't control them, and we can't hold this down.
That's right. Hello?
Yeah, we're here.
What happened?
I think George disconnected himself there.
Anyway, I found that surprising that he would publicly say something like that because, you know, that is a question we should be discussing, and we're not. I mean, every once in a while you'll get a news blurb or something like that, or your program will cover it, but for the most part, we're not addressing this issue, you know, and asking our politicians, what about this? You know, this solar flare storm.
In our October, if you look back, if you go to the our show archive on the show page, and you go to the October, I believe it was the October 7th program that we had. George was on, but we had Preston Nichols and Peter Moon. And Preston Nichols is a scientist who was involved in the HARP program, but he was also a brilliant guy. And his whole background is in electromagnetic frequencies, okay, and sound and so on. And we discussed this on the show. I asked him, what was the, what will happen, what could possibly happen if, he was talking about these solar flares that are developing in this electromagnetic field. Cloud that's coming into the solar to our solar system, and he says, "Well, in this coming year, in 2012, he says very possible. He says that if this comes in the way they're expecting it, he says it could fry, it'll destroy the entire electric grid. He says, and he says that's mild, and he says if it comes in the way." At a greater level, he says it will destroy us. It will kill us. Right?
The ramifications of it is so real. I mean, everybody says, "Oh, we've always had these solar flares." Yeah, we've had it, but we have never been so technologically dependent. I mean, our 1,000, 2,000, 3,000, 4,000 years, we have never been so technologically dependent. And I'm not saying that it wasn't before us, but, you know, we're taking what we know, what we understand. And so when I heard Gingrich say that, I was just, like, shocked that he would bring that to the forefront. Almost like saying to the reporters, why aren't you bozos asking me these questions?
But Pat Robertson stated he gave great credit to the Mayan calendar and the prophecy, end time prophecy, because he says the only reason I'm bringing this up, though it's a pagan philosophy and a religion, he says is that they've been so accurate. And he's been following this, you know, for years, and Pat Robertson, of course, but what's happening is anybody now Gingrich, I have no love or any respect for Gingrich.
No, nor do I.
Right, but the fact that he brought it up means that it's in the sub sphere of their knowledge, and. And a lot of people are concerned. Maybe that was probably the first of anyone in the mainstream media to bring attention to it. But I've seen many, many reports on it in the on the internet, and on NASA reports and reports that George has sent me. But for real, it's there. There's no question about it. And Preston Nichols, who's a well-known scientist in that field, was definitely frightened. He said, "Yeah, he says it could really just be the end of it, Leo."
Well, it is alarming how unalarmed people are, and it's not that I want people to be all crazy.
No, people really don't know this. They don't know the ramifications of this. I mean, I'll tell you, we were in, I don't know, where are you, where do you live?
Live in Arizona, in Tucson.
Tucson. I live in, my mother lives there, actually, but I live in Connecticut. And we just had a 2-week blackout up here with a snowstorm that devastated our power grid. And there were over 1 million people without power.
Yeah, I heard it was real bad up there.
Really bad. I was without power here, Lila and I, for about 4 days. And believe me, when it gets to be 30 or 28 degrees in the morning, without that furnace going on, it's 40, 45 degrees inside is pretty darn cold. And not having warm water, not having stoves, not having and refrigerators and all this kind of stuff is really, really is amazing. And you feel
and
like
that's what, and at least you have shelter. At least you have shelter, you know, over you. And that was still bad because I heard it was really, really bad.
It was bad. A lot of people lost their homes with things falling down on top of them. Listen, I have to say, George, unfortunately, disconnected. I think he put himself on mute and then he disconnected somehow. And we've only got about 2 minutes remaining recording on the show. But I want to thank you so much, Nikki, for
I appreciate this. And please say bye to George or I'll call him and say goodbye.
I'll give him a call. He's still up. He's probably, what happens is you can't call back into the show after it's off the air, you know?
I didn't know that.
Yeah, so that's why I ask people to call before the stream ends, because they can stay on the air like you and I have just done, but you know, once the show stops streaming, then they can't call in. You know, so.
Oh, okay. Well, I appreciate this, and I appreciate you all listening. And like I said, I owe so much to George for hanging in there. And he had faith that I would figure it out. And I was looking in one tight little hole, and he was trying to give me several little portals to look through, and it finally sunk in.
George and I have been doing this show every Friday night for since 2007. So we've got about 4 years of George shows on Friday nights. Of course, we do this show 4 nights a week, but we have a special with George every Friday night. So if you go back, you'll see some amazing discussions we've had with him about many, many, many different topics. So
I will definitely do that.
So thank you so much again. And
thank you, guys.
Okay. Good night. And I want to thank everybody else who listened tonight, and hope you join us next week right here at Tuesday. And good night, everyone.
Good night.